Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where we're shooting the shit with elected officials and candidates running for office to get to know the person beyond the politics.
Because politicians needed a rebrand.
Guys, we are back. I have no headphones. That's what you're seeing right here. If you're not on our YouTube, I don't know why you're not. Hop on over, go and see it. I fucked up. I didn't charge my headphones. Matt's going to kill me if you see a notification that I have passed onto another world. Like, look, Maddie had reason. She had cause, and don't put her in jail. She does look good in orange, though. So, like, just think about that. Maybe, like, do it as a joke. It's in her Halloween costume of it, but I would understand. And these are the United Free ones, and they really don't work. Sound like underwater. I tried wearing them before. I looked like I was wearing a stethoscope. We all know I can't do medical stuff, so obviously that career was a no, hence why we're all here. So.
The energy today is insane. It's literally insane. I couldn't be more opposite of you today, too. I literally woke up for literally no reason at 4:45, and I just could not go back to sleep. So I'm just like a zombie. You know when you're like tired, but you just can't fall asleep? Like I was just me for like an hour. I tried so hard, but I couldn't. So I just got up, took a shower, went for a walk, and I'm just doing my best now. Like I can't wait to go to bed tonight.
That's the worst because there's really like nothing you can do about it. Like it's so like mental and like energy. Like you're just screwed. You shit out of luck. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I don't know what happened there, but nonetheless, what a week. What a week it's been. Last time we all chatted, we were fresh off the news that Kamala was our new nominee or almost nominee. And it's just been crazy. The energy has been good. It's been high. It's been consistent so far. Obviously, it's still early, but I feel as though, and I don't know, and this is the other thing, my TikTok algorithm. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know whether it's just algorithming with like, I've been trying to interact with a lot of the Kamala videos and I'm reposting them. And so I'm like, is it just because I'm doing that I'm getting so much good Kamala shit or what? I feel like it's,
okay.
Well, I feel like it's just like it's out there and like it's just the energy's good.
It's all of the above. So first of all, fucking yeah, it's electric and I'm obsessed. Maybe that's the fuel here. Like it's not the like 10 cups of coffee. You know what I mean? But I would say that I think it's a little bit of both because the algorithm does its thing. You know, you keep likey, 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 tappy, tappy. But at one point I almost accidentally got us onto Women for Trump. So that was scary for a hot second. So, you know, sometimes it just tries to do weird things.
Yeah.
But I think every conversation I've had with people outside of the political bubble has had that like same energy to it. And I think the proof in the pudding is outside the algorithm. It's the like literally 100,000 plus white women crashing Zoom. Like it's the,
right.
They started like tonight, which guys, sorry, this is Monday that we're recording this and this will be on our Wednesday episode, but just know of like contextually, like there's a white dudes, LOL, white dudes for Kamala. And
I bought the hat.
You bought the hat. Stop
I
it.
Bought the trucker hat. I'm so fucking excited. This
is why I'm jealous that you look good in hats, because that's, speaking of hats, our hat is still for
white
sale.
Dudes for Harris. Like that's just the sickest hat that could probably ever exist. I'm obsessed. I can't wait to get it.
If you don't take pics in that and then send it to me so that we can put it on our social, I'm gonna like, I can't. We need it. But we also need white dudes to fucking vote for Kamala and to support her and organize for her. And there is literally a call tonight that originally they started out saying, oh, we have like 10K plus dudes now before they even, like they have to keep editing it because now they have 50K RSVP. Like we'll see what happens. So anyways, I've sent it to every white dude I know, which is a lot. And a lot of white dudes, okay? Like girl went to a private school. I got white dudes for days. So
collectively, we both know a lot of white dudes. I know. It's exciting. I'm excited to see how that turns out. I kind of, Samantha, I literally want to go on it and go find my husband.
Oh, you know what we need to do?
A TikTok?
Disguises.
Dress up like dudes and jump on.
No, literally, because then.
I might just start like, I wonder if it's going to be like a webinar where you can't see the participants. Or what? Because if not,
You can still see the name.
You can just scroll through the participants. Hopefully some guys will have cameras on or they'll have a little picture. And then I can just like in the Zoom chat privately message them and be like, hey, here's my Instagram. Say hi. But yeah, no, I've been thinking about this and like white dudes for Harris. Like that couldn't be more of a breeding ground of men that I need to be exposed to.
This is iconic. I'm telling you, you need a disguise. Like, please. For the story, for the plot, for all the things.
Do you think they like will kick out women if they're on it?
Maybe.
Honestly, it said on the thing, everyone's welcome. It's just like for.
But for the story. Dudes.
For the story, sure. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So anyways, I stan, I slay all the things, and we love everyone getting involved. Like, let's fucking get it together. We are. And I think like that's circling back to like the energy element of this whole thing. It is continuing to build. And I think when we see one positive thing, we like build on it. And last week at summer camp, Governor Shapiro's summer camp, we talked about like obviously misinformation, disinformation, all of those different things. And like also just energy and like what allows like really fucked up shit, aka the Trump world of things, to fester. And it's honestly, like, it sounds so like lame eye roll, but like it's the negativity and like all of the like we're fucked, blah, 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 blah. Like that sort of situation actually creates like a very keen environment for like distrust, yeah, and like whatever, which obviously we've chatted about a little bit before, but just reminding people. So like
that is like the recipe for fascism. You gotta get people uninspired and demoralized.
Which ironically enough, or maybe not ironically, I just use that anytime I don't know like a word that actually is accurate for a space. But our positive content is fucking doing great because people feed off of it. And there is good shit happening. We can make more good shit happen. So I think people are feeling that and realizing like, wow, I don't have to pick between two ancient old white dudes, one with like the haircut of hell and one that just like love him
but needs to sleep.
Needs to sleep. He needs to see you two, both of you. You need a good little nighttime routine, little like.
I know, me and Joey, we need a good night's rest tonight.
Yeah. And I wish that for you guys. Anyways, summer camp.
Summer camp. How was it?
It was so fucking fun. And you know how to be fun if I woke up at 5:30 in the morning and I still said it was fun after.
Period.
I know. Because y'all know I'm not a morning person whatsoever. Like, dear God. Even I was like making a vlog. The way that my face is so swollen at like 5:30 in the morning, it is.
I know.
I go from Lego to not Lego. And I don't know what happens in between the Lego phase, but something.
What?
It's like, I don't understand. It's like, yeah, some of these are never seeing the day of light. But it was such a fun concept. I was like.
A day of light.
A day of light.
The light of day. She might be running on a few hours of sleep, but. She knows a good time to correct Samantha.
Hey, you got to keep your P's and Q's. So, you know, someone's got to do it. It's a full-time job. Anyways, I, as a sleepaway summer camp girly, just like love a camp-themed situation. So Obviously walking into that, I was like, our friend Bev was there. So we were able to like go together and it was like so much fun. We met Shapiro. He's a treat. He's like he really reminds me of like PDB in a way of like, he could just like speak off the cuff and like just delivers. Like he does not need any notes. He's just boom. He's there. He's focused. He gets the message. He gets the point. He really, I think, besides obviously that they're hosted this whole summer camp for creators. So giving the context, creators across niches, talking about elections, democracy, all of the things is like, it's a priority for them. Like they get it. And his team is like amazing too. So shout out Gavin, love ya. But like the whole situation was great. They did really good, like icebreakers and conversations, panels, etc. He was fantastic. And I'm very curious to see like obviously where this little political moment goes for him, you know?
Yeah. Would he be the idea. I love the concept.
He'd be a great VP. I can tell you that right now. I'm not saying like he's going to be the pick. I think he is a top notch dude. That would make a top-notch VP.
There it is, folks.
Yeah. I also would like to give a shout-out to our girly pops at Amtrak because they got me to and fro. And
you know I love Amtrak.
Amtrak gets it, okay?
I love the Amtrak. We know this. We've talked about this. But that sounds amazing. The content was great. It looked really fun. And I just, I love the concept. I hope they continue to do it, and hopefully other electeds do something similar moving forward. Yeah, and
because side note to that is it's so hard to get creators all over the country together one spot a lot of times. However, it's those in-person ones when they can actually make it happen are just so much more impactful, and just the networking in person. Chef's totally. Kit. So
totally.
I hope they do more of that.
I think it's also it's cool always to being in person, it creates community, and especially in work that can be isolating online, to see others that are doing the same work and know that you're all in it together and pushing towards similar goals, I think is impactful. So we love IRL to URL, URL to IRL events.
Oh,
so
what in the marketing gorgeous beautifulness is that lingo?
Yeah, just me and my brain doing its best on this Monday.
We're proud of you.
Well, I feel as though we can get into this episode. We have a very, very good one, a very fun one, a very informative one, I would say. Would you?
Look, you're just saying our brand messaging, so thank you for that. If anyone was wondering.
The thing that I say about every episode we do. I don't lie, though. I don't lie.
No, she does not. No lies detected.
I just repeat myself. But no lies have been told.
No. Hey, at least we're on it. You got the brand message on point. And that's what we're here to drive home with this episode, but also in terms of telling your friends about this podcast. So if you haven't yet, take this pause and just hit send, share, copy link, boom, send in the group chat. Make sure all the friends got the 401. Maybe, put it on the road trip out for whatever summer activities you guys are doing, discuss it after, discuss in the car, whatever you want to do. Yeah. Flights, download, get stuck in an airport, CrowdStrike decides to CrowdStrike again. You got us. Anyways, moving to this episode, because Maddie's looking at me girl, I'm going to fall asleep.
No.
As I'm dead. We're getting into this episode with a fellow Jersey person. That's what maybe I'm so excited. So excited. Our guest of the moment is Congressman Andy Kim. He is running for Senate, for the U.S. Senate seat in New Jersey, specifically Bobby Goldbar's seat, aka Haynosity. So trying to clean up that mess and bring some normalcy back to the U.S. Senate seat of Bobby. Again, Bobby Goldbar's. I really can't even say his full name. I just can't do it.
Bobby Goldbar's. That's all it is. That's
better all it can be. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know how it is. So anyways, to get into this episode, to get the whole story rolling, without further ado, here's Congressman Kim.
Hi, I'm Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of LoveSack and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Imagine learning from the best without the years of struggle. On my podcast, I sit down with stars like Montel Jordan and Sarah Blakely to share the hard-earned lessons that can save you time and effort on your path to success. Ready to speed up your success story? Listen to Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Congressman Kim, we are so excited to chat. As a former Jersey person, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am, because all things Jers, getting to talk that is everything to me.
Jers, I haven't heard that one before.
Well, that's because you're stuck on the West Coast. You got to fly in. It's those things. But you're running for Senate. So tell us about that. How did you decide, I'm going to go from Congress to Senate. I'm going to jump in this race. I know things have been crazy and we'll get into it a little bit, but what made you say, this is the time is now?
Yeah. Well, look, I'll start by saying, I never thought that I would do any of this. I'm really not that political of a person in a general matter. I never dreamt of running for office when I was a kid. So, even stepping up to run for Congress when I was 34 was beyond my wildest imaginations, let alone win. Running for Senate was not in my cards, certainly not for 2024. I got a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old, 2 little boys. And I'll be honest, I don't really see them as much as I'd like to start with. So then doing a statewide campaign was not high on my list of things I wanted to do. But I'll be honest with you, I felt really compelled to do it. The circumstances, I'm sure we'll talk through it, of just the senator getting indicted for corruption and bribery. I just remember that night, I couldn't sleep at all that night after the indictment came out. And, you know, I remember talking to my wife and just trying to figure out what it is that we should do. And, you know, I ended up jumping in the next day, 24 hours later. I felt really compelled to do it. It was a feeling I've only felt a couple times in my life, that if I didn't do this, I thought I would probably regret it for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Sure. Well, before we get into that part, I'm curious because about what the like first catalyst was for you to run for Congress. You said you're in your early 30s. Like what, if you weren't political, so what was that moment for you?
I'm not political, but I'm someone who worked in government and in public service. I consider myself to be a public servant. I was in diplomacy and national security before. So, you know, had the chance to work at the, you know, the White House, at the National Security Council under Obama, worked in diplomacy abroad and here at home. Honestly, the impetus was two things. One is I became a dad. And I don't know, like it just all of a sudden I'm thinking about issues beyond what I normally did, not just foreign policy, but education and healthcare and all these things. And then, you know, when Trump got elected, just seeing the dangers that I saw, you know, just the worry that I told you, I worked at the White House. I know the power of that building. I know the power of the presidency. And that was the hands of someone I thought so unfit for that office. So I was really worried. And it was just this confluence of the two. My congressman of my home district was one of Trump's closest allies in Congress and led the charge on gutting the healthcare, or trying to gut healthcare and the Affordable Care Act in 2017. And I just couldn't believe that my own congressman was leading that charge. So I decided, you know, I needed to do something to try to hold him accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is so key and like kind of like a catalyst for so many people, not just running for office, but getting involved and tuned into politics. Like the Trump of it all is that for a moment. I think the other one we often hear is also like the pandemic and these like things coming together. We're like, oh my God, we have to do something. We need to get involved. And, you know, obviously we're at another juncture where sort of, you know, that's coming together. And so 2024, of course, from keeping the majority in the Senate to every other, you know, spot in between is so important. And so like one of those things too, that I think really frustrates voters is like corruption, transparency, all the things, hence Bobby G, aka Bobby Goldbars, as Fetterman likes to call him, having his issues, you know, just getting indicted and all those things is a big issue. And so I'm curious from, you know, your perspective going across the state, talking to voters, you know, hearing about, you know, sort of just the reactions to that, like, what has that been like and like your own reaction to that as well?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's one of those things. I remember my neighbor, he has little kids too. So our kids were playing in the front of our yard the day of the indictment of the senator. And I remember talking to my neighbor and I asked him, like, what did you think of this, the news about the senator? And he was just like, that's Jersey. You know, that's Jersey politics. And like, you know, it was very frustrating, you know, because I felt that times in my life too. Like 84% of people in New Jersey surveyed believe that their politicians are corrupt. Like that is a devastating number. Like how can democracy function or thrive with that much distrust in the system? And, you know, whether it's jokes about the Sopranos or any number of other things, like we have a certain reputation that I just find very intolerable and frustrating. Like, but the problem is, and I've been saying this line a lot lately, I've been saying, I believe that the opposite of democracy is apathy. It's if people kind of give up, if they throw up their hands and feel helpless. And so I guess I just wanted to kind of push back against that. Like I wanted not just New Jersey, but the country, you know, as they're reading about this in the front page, I want them to know that we don't stand for this, that we don't tolerate it. We're not going to accept it. We're not going to get apathetic about it. We're not going to feel helpless about it. And so I said something actually similar to what I said in 2017, which is I'm not going to assume that someone else will fight my fights for me. So if I have a frustration with what my senator has done, question is, what am I going to do about it? And so, you know, that was that kind of impetus. It was to try to restore a sense of trust and integrity, because the lack of trust is what allows for people like Donald Trump to succeed in politics.
Exactly.
It's when people give up and don't believe in the institutions. And, you know, you see then, you know, things like January 6th, you see things like the big lie. And so, you know, my effort to try to push back against this isn't just about policies. It's about the culture of our politics at large.
Yeah, it's just like fascism 101 is just make people give up and throw their hands up, like you said. That's unfortunately such a movement we're seeing right now across the board. But I want to go back to like this specific scandal and situation. Just for those who don't know, can you kind of explain what happened and if there was like something that uniquely led to corruption in this situation? What are the guardrails that should have been there? Can you just kind of like run through all of that?
Well, you know, this particular circumstance was that, you know, my Senator Menendez was, you know, indicted 16 counts of corruption, bribery, you know, the gold bars found in his house, the wads of cash. And it wasn't just that they were gold bars and wads of cash, but it was about his direct work as a senator. He was the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, allegations that he was acting as a foreign agent for other countries, providing information. And as someone who's worked in national security, you know, I've worked in war zones abroad, and also like I found that to be particularly disturbing, you know, and scary. So, you know, that was the impetus of that. It was not his first indictment. It was not his first run-in with this kind of problem. And I think like that was also something that was, you know, really alarming. But, you know, look, as my neighbor and others have said, you know, I in my lifetime, the number of elected officials in New Jersey that we've seen go to court, go to jail, you know, have all sorts of problems. I'm sure Sammy remembers this. Like it's unfortunately a long list. And so, you know, your question, Maddie, about, you know, how do we try to stop this? How do we try to fix it? You know, there's no single piece of legislation that I can write and pass into law that will just rid corruption, but there's a deeper cultural problem. And I think there's a problem of the lack of accountability. I think that there is a problem when it comes to just the transactional nature of politics, whether it's legal or illegal. There is just whether it's a special interest, a lobbyist, and so much money pouring in. That's a big problem of it. And it's just like, look, it's a broader just kind of disrespect that we see of governance. You know, like I'm a son of immigrants, a public school kid that gets to work a job whose job description is in the Constitution of the United States. Like Article 1 is my job description. That is a deeply humbling experience. And it does demand the highest level of accountability, the highest level of standard. But, you know, what we're seeing right now is just this erosion and decay within our politics. You know, I've even talked to some of my Republican colleagues. They basically tell me that their plan is to try to make politics so toxic, so horrible that, you know, reasonable, thoughtful, honest people don't want anything to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, and as a result, you're starting to see people of just, you know, a real moral question and ethical question and just, you know, a lot of people getting into politics that are really in it for themselves, for their own promotion. You know, I got people who want to be some of my colleagues more interested in being social influencers rather than lawmakers. And, you know, that's, you know, that I think is just taken away from what the job actually should be. So there's a deeper problem that we face as a country. And I'm not saying I have all the answers how to fix it, but I'm trying to do my part and trying to move it in a certain direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I also feel like, too, it's like, it's not just like keeping voters home and like people from getting involved, whether it's like volunteering or becoming a poll worker or things of that nature, but even running for office, it's like making it so toxic to do so and putting so much at risk that you're like, okay, would I really want to put my family through that? You know, it's like all of those like little things. Like I was even chatting with some friends to the poll worker point of like, okay, like this would be a great thing to do. It's like doing your civic duty, like all the great things, but then thinking about like, okay, well, like, how would you handle all of the death threats that you get? You know, it's all of these dynamics at play that obviously have a goal, and like understanding that goal is so important. But I think obviously we need to chip away at so many different solutions. And one of them is trying to restore public trust. And so I'm curious from your perspective, what restoring trust with people and voters looks like. Like, how do we do that? Even if it's like a little, you know, one piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, I kind of two things that I think about here. And this is something I try to push, you know, my party, the Democratic Party, to do better on. But look, first and foremost, you got to get out there. You know, you really got to meet people and try to engage. You know, like I'm a Democrat that won a district Trump won twice. You know, in 2020, Trump won my district. I was on the ballot. I was able to win it as well. I was one of only seven Democrats in the country to win a district Trump won. And, you know, a lot of that came from just being out there and engaging, trying to meet people. I've done now over 75 town halls in my time in Congress, you know, trying to put myself out there. But it's tough. I mean, like a lot of my colleagues, like, you know, and myself, I feel some resistance sometimes because, you know, there's a lot of chaos out there. And anytime I go out there publicly, like there's a good chance I'm going to get yelled at or someone's going to get upset. But what I keep telling myself and others in politics is if you're only having comfortable conversations in politics, it means you're not talking to all the people you need to be talking to. You know, you need to intentionally put yourself in uncomfortable situations because that's how you're going to actually meet people and engage with people who are disinterested in politics. If you're just trying to throw a rally, the only people that are going to come, unless you do some different outreach, are people who are already invested in politics. But the question is, how do you get to those that feel apathetic, those that feel cynical about that? And that requires an intentional strategy. The other aspect of it is like, you know, try to understand like why it is people feel this way. And a lot of it stems from this question of like, who are they working for? What are they fighting for? And as a result, a lot of the answer to that is this feeling like they are working for themselves, that politicians are trying to advance their own ego, their ambition, their own career, their own profit, as we've seen with, you know, with the case that we were talking about with the senator. Like, for instance, like probably the most popular piece of legislation that I've introduced in my time in Congress is legislation that would ban members of Congress and senior government officials from owning and trading individual stocks. You know, that's not going to solve all the problems in the world, but it gets at to a very part of why people feel so distrusting is like,
yeah,
they think that, you know, with the information we have in Congress that we're doing insider trading or that it's about, you know, yeah, stock portfolios. And you know, look, like the fact that we are that members of Congress are allowed to do this, I find it really, really terrible. And it's just one of those things that absolutely should not happen. And that would be a sign, that would be a signal that, you know, these are the types of changes we're making to be able to fix this. So that tied with ending gerrymandering, ending, you know, trying to have, you know, real campaign finance reform, you know, all the things like, or ethics, just even ethics reform in the Supreme Court, things like that, you know, could go a long way for us to try to show people that we're fixing this. And I'll just say one more thing. I mean, with regards to New Jersey, for instance, not only was the challenge that I faced Senator Menendez, but, you know, we have a machine politics here in New Jersey. You know, we are arguably the last machine politics statewide operation in the country. And, you know, we saw that really come out with my primary, where we saw, you know, political leaders, you know, getting involved and trying to shape the outcome. And we have to stand up and say that's not right. And even when it's members of our own party in particular, we have to show that, you know, we stand up against the unfairness in our system, regardless whether they're Democrats or Republicans. And so those are the things that are energizing me right now that, you know, hopefully we can try to show that a reform agenda is powerful, not just in New Jersey, but around this country.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, fighting corruption and creating solutions around that is one way, I think, to gain back trust. But I think just also like showing good governance is a way to gain back trust. So I'm curious, like, what you're telling voters of like what you've accomplished and how you're fighting for them, not only on kind of this corrupt political world we're living in, but also just things that affect their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, you know, I think that you're absolutely right. Like that responsiveness, when they're feeling like you're actually trying to solve problems in their lives, that's big. But, you know, what I will say is I've really learned you can't, it's not just about getting the pieces of legislation through. It's about connecting those dots specifically to their lives. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for instance, you know, the infrastructure law or the Inflation Reduction Act, like we've passed major pieces of legislation and, you know, President Biden's leadership and leadership of Democrats in Congress, you know, we've done some generational change here, but people don't always understand, like, you know, where that is impacting them. You know, like the child tax credit that cut child poverty in America in half for the period of time that was in place before the Republicans stopped it. You know, people didn't even realize that money was coming into their bank accounts unless they were like really paying attention, didn't fully understand what was the policy that made that happen. And so we have to go and explain that. You know, we have to try to connect those dots. You know, I did a lot of work on trying to lower prescription drug costs, healthcare costs, and I'm proud, you know, like whether that's the $35 a month cap on insulin. But again, you have to go out and talk to people about that, make the case and show them that, you know, that that's going to make a tangible impact on their life. And that's hard, you know, when people are getting their information from scattered sources, a lot of them not paying too much attention to the politics. So, you know, I think that that's just another reason why, you know, we need to have a lot more face-to-face interaction, a lot more effort to go out there and do that type of outreach. But again, right now it's hard. You got to break through the cynicism, and that's been, you know, really difficult in this moment in time.
For sure. And I'm sure also like working in Congress, like the cynicism within other members too, and just like the various perspectives. And obviously you bring the father perspective to policy, to like what you're thinking. And I'm curious how that's impacted your lens on making things happen in Congress, and also just the issues that are really top of mind for you. Like, how has that, you know, sort of shifted your focus?
Well, look, it's you know, it's my North Star, you know, being a dad and my kids, you know, it's the reason I do this. I mean, and I think it's important for people to hear that from me, because I want them to have a sense that I'm in it for something bigger than me. You know, again, it's not about ego or ambition or career. But like, I look at this and like, you look at the chaos and the craziness in the world right now. And I, the way I sort of say it is like, I don't want my kids to grow up in a broken America. You know, I don't want my kids to grow up with this level of chaos and turbulence out there. And I think that that's something I try to convey as my motivation, as my inspiration for my work. And it definitely manifests in terms of the types of things that I work on. I talked about the child tax credit. I worked on, you know, paid parental leave and universal pre-K, childcare affordability. I do a lot on trying to address child poverty, child hunger. Right now, I had several meetings today about mental health challenges for youth in America, and the difficulty we're facing right now, which is, you know, so much problem when it comes to mental health and capacity in many different ways. You know, my office, we've kind of talked about it as a kids agenda. That is something that I think can really unite our country in terms of that recognition about, you know, what comes next. And I think, you know, even though, as I mentioned, it's tough for me to be away from my kids so much, feel like I'm missing so much of their childhood, I try to think through that this is my way of trying to be a good dad. This is my way of trying to give them the future that they want. But I also have really come to see that it's valuable to have the voice of young parents in Congress. You know, it's important to have people that have, you know, I got a second grader and a fourth grader. It's important to have people that have that direct experience right now. And a lot of other young parents, young people can connect with, you know, having that kind of diversity in Congress. So that's something that, you know, I've come to really understand and feel proud of. You know, part of me was wondering, like, maybe people don't get into politics till after kids graduate college, but I decided to run when I was in my 30s. But I've come to understand that, like, even though I'm younger than a lot of my colleagues, like, I bring a necessary perspective that I think a lot of Americans want to see, you know, voiced in the room and have a seat at the table.
For sure. You definitely should be proud of that. I think that's important for everyone to see, not only just your kids, but like you said, other young parents. Our Congress is supposed to look like us. And so it's important to have that representation. I'm curious, like, how else you like to connect with voters, like on a human level, like whether it's, you know, obviously being a parent, or is there like certain things in your life, be it hobbies or favorite shows? Like, what are the like kind of things that you like to connect with people on beyond the policy?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I mean, I think, you know, I guess this kind of comes out from being a dad as well. But, you know, some of the things people know me most for instance, I have this deep obsessions with Legos. Probably one of the things people most know me for is a post that I did. I talked about how during when I was engaged and when we had our wedding registry, I put a Lego Millennium Falcon on our wedding registry. And I promised my wife, who gave me like the biggest eye roll ever, that like, if someone actually bought it for us, that I would save it until we have kids, which I did. I waited about 10 years before I built this Lego Millennium Falcon. And it was just like something I did on social media. And like a lot of, like lots of people were following, lots of people were sharing their own experiences and, you know, just kind of that shared experience of just, you know, of childhood, of parenthood. Mm-hmm. So between that, I do a lot. I have this other obsession of making bagels, and I've done you know, bagel making classes online and other things like that. But it just, you know, a lot of what I want to show people is like, is sort of the side of me that, you know, isn't just about the politics, isn't just about the war, for them to see me in terms of what it is that I, like my day to day is like. And perhaps one of my favorite stories, and I'll just share this, is when I was doing like a 4th of July parade. And I saw, as I was doing the walking down the parade, you know, someone yells out, he's like, "Hey, Andy Kim." And I said, I looked over at him and I was like, "Yeah, what's going on?" And he's just like, "Thanks for being normal." Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, that's probably like the best compliment you can get in politics right
for
now.
For sure. Like, the bar is low, but it's also like such a good compliment.
Yeah.
It's so real.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just like, you know, I think in the time when it just feels like everything about our politics and our governance is performative. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people just want to, you know, to see somebody that they can really connect in with in that kind of just regular way. So, you know, that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, mm-hmm. I'm really curious what your favorite bagel place in New Jersey is, because we need all the recs.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I'll go with my hometown. There's a good, it's called Moore's Bagel in Morristown. They have another, it started off in Marlton, which is another town that I grew up in. They got great stuff, but there's great bagels all over the place. And, you know, I think that's, I feel blessed by that, you know, living in the land of bagels, you know, cheesesteaks, water rice. It's a good place to raise kids. Not the greatest for my diet when I'm on the road for camping. But, you know, there's only so many like Wawa sandwiches one can eat, you know, as you're campaigning around. Maybe, maybe not. But
I mean, once you get like the mac and cheese involved, though, like the Wawa mac and cheese is supreme, and same with their quesadilla. So like, as long as there's like a variety of the Wawa foods.
Yeah, that's true. If you have a variety, it's not that you don't have to feel guilty that you're eating there every day, right?
Exactly. Well, you know what? Actually, the better question is, pork roll or Taylor ham?
Well, see, like, look, I'm trying to run statewide here. Why do you throw the divisive questions out there? That's gonna, next thing you're going to ask me is like, do I like, you know, the Phillies and the Mets and the Yankees, or, you know, these can create civil wars in Jersey, but.
That is true. After the Central Jersey, like, phenomenon. Yeah, I hear you.
Well, look, I wear proudly my South Jersey heritage, and if elected, I think I'd be the first senator from South Jersey, I think, since like World War II era or something.
Oh my God.
So, you know, we're more of a pork roll type of world, but I say that to be honest, I'd never want to be one of those politicians that just panders to everybody.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm proud, hopefully, to be able to represent and to stand up and be a statewide elected official from a different part of Jersey.
Well, as a North Jersey person, I commend and I say, let's do it. So,
wow, unity, you guys. So cute.
Yeah, it's really beautiful.
Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. We loved talking to you and hearing about your platform and all the things. And before you go, can you just plug like where people can find you, social media, all of the things?
Yeah, you know, they can go to all my social handles, just Andy Kim NJ. And they can go to andykim.com if they want to learn anything further. But I'm excited about this. You know, we have a real shot at being able to pull this off. And as mentioned, I think, you know, people are excited about a new generation of leadership stepping up. And I'd be the, I think, third or fourth youngest senator in the country, the first Asian American from the entire East Coast of America in the U.S. Senate. And just, you know, in general, I think me and Cory Booker can show a different side of Jersey politics going forward. So I'm excited about that.
What so thanks for having me. Duo indeed.
Yeah. Amen to that.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.